stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM DB2 Connect, Making the Connections to DBT V8 conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Tom Herlihy. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and thank you for joining the call this morning. We appreciate you taking your time out of your schedule to hear about DB2 Connect and how that allows you to tap into one of your more important assets within your company, and that is your business information. DB2 Connect allows you to put information into the hands of the right people easily and efficiently by connecting all sorts of applications from web to Windows, Unix, Linux, mobile, and it doesn't matter where that data is or resides within your IT infrastructure. DB2 Connect allows you to bring it all together. This morning, we have Paul Tsiakopoulos, who is from the IAM brand, and I will let him introduce himself to you in a brief bio and then go ahead with this morning's topic. Paul?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Good morning and good afternoon, wherever you are. So my name is Paul Tsiakopoulos, and I will be taking you through the product DB2 Connect from a technical and business value standpoint. If you all go to the next slide, this is my biography. A couple things I'll note is I appreciate your attention, and I appreciate the fact that you folks maintain System Z and DB2 for System Z databases. And in the spirit of that, which is ultimate availability, as I'm presenting to you, I actually have two laptops here, and the presentation's running on both of them because I've been having an outage on my Windows machine. So I wanted to make sure I had the same kind of availability levels that I might get on a mainframe. So with that said, my biography, just real quick, there's an email address at the bottom there if you're on Presenter's Biography. I'm from Toronto. I spent a number of years in the lab. I work on both the business and the technical side of DB2, talking from DBAs to CIOs, so hopefully I'll be able to bring that mix of my experience to this presentation. I've written a number of books on distributed DB2, Linux, Unix, and Windows. Some of them are shown there. So if we go to the next slide, getting more value. And I just decided that I was going to put together kind of a list of all the great things of DB2 Connect in a nutshell. And then go into the details. Basically, there's a lot of people out there that are going to offer you access to your mainframe resources. And they're going to sell you a bag of drivers. So DataDirect, Marantz stuff, Neon Shadow, those kinds of folks. And to think of DB2 Connect as simply a bag of drivers is a big mistake, and a big mistake that happens often. So in this presentation, indeed, it provides connectivity through APIs, etc., but a heck of a lot more, and that's what I'm going to take you through. So probably one of the big things it does is it greatly improves programmer productivity with your choice of development API and your choice of the integrated development environment in which the application developers get all their efficiencies from. And that can really help increase productivity, but it also helps sustain the application workload on the mainframe. I actually work on a competitive team at IBM. I lead a competitive team versus Oracle, Teradata, and Microsoft. And a lot of times we see a lot of pressures on ZOS or the i5OS operating systems to offload into things like SQL Server, Oracle, and so on and so forth. And sometimes in the Microsoft world, we see a lot of pressure there based on the development .NET group. And so what we provide is the ability for those .NET developers to work within their IDE, so their Visual Studio, and to never even realize what the back-end data source is. So that's a pretty key thing, right? So a bunch of drivers that aren't just about connectivity, they're about programmer productivity, and we'll take you through that. One of the most important things with DB2 Connect is that it's built to deliver continuous application availability and manage and balance the workload in a Sysplex DB2 ZOS environment. Now that's important, because when you make an investment in your System I or your System Z server, you've done so for availability reasons, one of them. In fact, even our biggest competitor, Larry Ellison at Oracle, says that the mainframe is a first piece rate of technology. Right? So it is, when people say 5.9's availability, they say the gold standard mainframe-like availability. If your application is running there and you're delivering data to the distributed tier, then you need to make sure that that distributed tier, right, encompasses or delivers the same kind of availability of the operational runtime on the ZOS or the i5OS. And the reason for that is an outage is an outage, and it can take place on any of the tiers, and it's important to understand how to minimize and deliver the service levels that you're looking for across those tiers. At the same time, the cost of mainframe resources has been going down. You look at the new ZIP and ZAP processing engines, the integrated facility for Linux on the ZOS, et cetera. However, we always want to make sure that we minimize resource consumption. So, in other words, next to zero or minimal MIPS consumption, and DB2 Connect pretty much does that, and I'll take you through that. Finally, as mentioned in the intro, is you want to provide transparent access via SQL to all kinds of sources that don't just include DB2. The customers that I work with, there's lots of Kix and IMS and MQ Series and vSAM and other data sources, Adabase and so on. So DB2 Connect can get you access to that kind of stuff as well. So it really integrates all that data. And, of course, maybe you want to integrate and extend that data to mobile devices. And maybe, finally, you want to modernize the application development environment to participate in service-oriented architectures and enable it for web services. So if you go to the next slide, Simplified Data Access, DB2 Connect Solutions, it just kind of goes into some of these points and their benefits. So DB2 Connect provides you with a complete application development environment that covers Microsoft.NET or any of their legacy code, Java, J2EE, some open source languages, PHP, Python, Perl, Ruby on Rails. It provides an environment in which you can instantly create service-oriented architecture applications by taking business logic built on the mainframe and instantly exposing it as a web service. And it runs on a middle tier across many platforms, Windows, Linux, and onto mobile platforms. So what a lot of people can provide is a complete set of drivers for all programming languages. So, you know, a lot of our competitors out there, they indeed provide that access. What they don't provide is the second bullet under benefits, and that's the developer productivity. Well, I'll go back to .NET for a moment, because, again, I bet you 80% of our .NET customers are building .NET applications that go against the mainframe. And so the beauty of .NET is you simply open up this environment, visualstudio.net, and you drag and drop and pretty much build your application. And quite often what we see is the DBAs say, yes, we love DB2 ZOS, we'll stick there. The architecture board, they love serviceability of DB2, its uptime, et cetera. So they kind of say, yeah, we vote for DB2. And the application developers say, well, if we build a .NET application for DB2 versus SQL Server, it's going to take us twice as long. And that sometimes causes problems. Because the word performance, it means very different things. To the DBAs and to the architecture board, performance means your service level agreement. And to application developers, it means how fast can I build this application. So the intention of DB2 Connect is to take that decision out of the scope, to let data decisions be data decisions, and to provide the utmost in rapid application development tooling for today's most popular development environments. And those main ones are Visual Studio and Rational Application Developer. And finally, you'll leverage your investment, because with the DB2 Connect infrastructure, right, you'll build one application and you'll be able to access many data sources. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about how you can federate and take data from SQL Server and join it with your mainframe data simply by writing the same SQL you've always been writing. And DB2 Connect under the covers takes care of all that. So if you go to the next slide, simplifying access to mainframe and host data, these are some questions that typically I put in front of the execs that I talk to when looking at this type of connectivity solution. For example, do you find that you're accessing a lot of mainframe and host data for use in tools like Microsoft Excel, Access, Cognos, Business Objects, Crystal Reports? So I guess they're the same company now. Well, and what we usually find is the answer is most definitely yes. And what we also usually find is that customers typically create a copy tier. So they take all this data maybe out of the AS400 or the mainframe, and they put it in this middle tier solely to facilitate the transfer of information to applications like this. Well, Microsoft Excel is a great example, the most popular BI tool in the world. The inefficiencies, the costs associated with the middle tier, breaking a single version of the truth, managing it, maintaining it, patching the database, patching the operating system, are all things that are in this middle tier access layer issue. And the amount of customers I see that take their data out of the AS400 or the mainframe, they put it into maybe a SQL Server or maybe a DB2 for the sole purpose of supporting an application like Excel is enormous. And it represents a lot of inefficiencies in the business. The DB2 Connect can take away that whole tier, right, and all the costs associated with that tier. As well, what kind of application server investment do you have? So DB2 Connect provides you the ability to work on all application servers. So Microsoft IIS, of course, WebSphere, and so on. So depending where you've located the web serving tier of your solution, it might be on the mainframe, excellent choice. But if it's on a distributed platform, DB2 Connect can interoperate with that. The third bullet really speaks to what I've been saying, right? How many resources are spent on data copy solutions for applications that can't or don't want to access the data on the mainframe? Well, DB2 Connect takes that away. And finally, for the System I or the i5OS customers, they have a very unique opportunity to perform consolidation and simplify the topology of their environment. Because these System I servers, they run i5OS, they can run Linux, and they can run Windows through an IXS interface. So now you've got an opportunity to stand up multiple tiers of the architecture on a physically single-located box, and that's going to reduce maintenance costs, HVAC costs, and all sorts of footprint costs. The next slide, improving programmer productivity. These are just some questions. A lot of them are repetitive of kind of what I've talked about. But these are questions that you can ask yourself or ask your executives when you look to invest in a solution like DB2 Connect. So one is, do you find that getting programmers with modern methodology skills is becoming harder? And how can I integrate them into the mainframe? So in the AS400 world, we see a lot of RPG programmers, right, which is more of a legacy traditional programming model, or a lot of COBOL logic that resides on the mainframe. So how do we modernize these? Because today's economy has stepped down the cost of developers in .NET and Java, for example. They're more ubiquitous, right? In fact, probably the best paying job you could get today is as a COBOL programmer, to be honest. So DB2 Connect allows me to let people in .NET and Java access these mainframe services, access these COBOL stored procedures, call them, work with that data. And that's going to reduce your development costs. Okay? It's going to allow you to modernize your application development methodology very quickly. When I look at the AS400, if I had a whole bunch of RPG logic, putting DB2 Connect in the middle tier, I instantly can evolve those as web services, allow .NET developers to get them, those services, and so on. And I'll give you a perfect example. We have a famous telco company that you go into a mall and you sign up for a new cell phone. Within minutes, everything is activated and running because what they do is take this application and they dump the data onto a MQ series queue, and it goes through the process and does the credit check and then eventually puts the number on the system. That application is actually written in .NET. But the last time that I found a .NET developer that knew how to write MQ series applications, well, I haven't, okay? And that's the bottom line is when you put DB2 Connect in the middle, now I have access for these .NET developers to view MQ series message queues as tables. And heck, we know how to insert and read from a table, and thus we're starting to build MQ series transactions. There's some other ones here. I'll let you read through those on your own time. The last bullet, for example, how about if you want to extend the applications that are running on the mainframe down to PDAs or phones, smartphones, or a BlackBerry, for example. So if you go to the next slide, called DB2 Connect in a Nutshell, looks a little confusing at first because in my presentation it actually builds, so I'll try to take you through it. But you start on the far right, and you see you have your System Z or System I server. Okay? And one of the tiers of access will be just the desktop PCs, right? And you can see that they make a direct connection to that data. That connection today is pretty much standardized on TCP/IP, and they can call any of the APIs they want to get there. In the middle, you'll see the application servers. So this is another way in which I can deploy DB2 Connect, right? I can put an application server down, and people connect to the application server that connects to the data. And finally, you have your web application server. So maybe I have a web farm, and of course people connect to the web farm, and they get to DB2 Connect. You can see the APIs box. It's pointing at the desktop PCs, the application server, or the web application server. And that's essentially where they reside. And those APIs, as you can see in the bottom right, include ADO.NET, ADO, ODBC, OLADB, ROAR stands for Ruby on Rails, Perl, JDBC, SQLJ, DB2 CLI. For those of you familiar with the Microsoft programming model, CLI and ODBC are the same things. So if you know ODBC interface, you know how to write CLI. And CLI can be a little advantageous because we don't go on any of these tiers where the API box points to. We don't have to go through the driver manager and load up the ODBC driver manager. We just go direct to the disk. Go to the next slide, DB2 Connect server versus DB2 Connect product. I just showed you a bunch of different ways to deploy DB2 Connect. Depending on the edition that you buy, so the product, right, you're allowed to connect it in this format or this format. So we have a whole bunch of different kind of licensing schemes. One is an all-you-can-eat model. So I can deploy as much DB2 Connect as I want in my environment. I can give a copy to my mother for Christmas, whatever, to your wife for Valentine's Day, whatever it is you want. And we license it based on the capacity of the mainframe, or in the case of iSeries, of the total number of managed processors dedicated to the i5 OS. And then we have middle-tier pricing. So if you choose to have, let's say, an application server, you can license it based on the total amount of processors tied to the web server farm, not to the amount of DB2 Connect you install. And then there's two other models. One is a named user license. So I am Paul Zakopoulos. So I am a living, breathing person. I consume oxygen, and I therefore have a named user license, and I can connect to the mainframe through DB2 Connect. And finally, you have a capacity type license called concurrent users. So how many users are on this box at any time? So, I mean, I don't expect you to remember all that kind of stuff. Just understand that from a product perspective, there's a product that suits the way that you want to license the environment or the solution. No matter what product it is, it's all built on the DB2 Connect server technology, right? So I don't care what edition you buy, it's still DB2 Connect. And that gets installed on a Power box or an Intel AMD box or even the Z-Series in the IFL, the Integrated Facility for Linux partition running Z-Linux, which we've seen a lot of work done because there's a lot of benefits there like hypersockets and all that that we'll talk about. There are circumstances where you may not want to deploy a DB2 Connect server component. So, for example, lightweight client deployments may want to use just an ODBC or a JDBC driver. So we provide those, the Type 4 JDBC driver. You can put that on your application, and it can connect to the mainframe or to i5OS. However, you still need a DB2 Connect license to do that. And this is actually a really neat thing because that driver is actually the exact same driver that's used on the ZOS DB2 implementation. And what that means is you can actually build applications and test them and consume Windows cycles and port those applications out to the mainframe. The SQL is 99% portable. And because they're tested on the same API to instantiate that SQL, the exact same code is used, you know that the migration is virtually seamless. Okay, so just to finish out, and then we'll start to look at some deployment models, or to finish out on deployment models, we'll look at programmers in more depth. There's really a couple ways to connect to the mainframe or i5OS with DB2 Connect. One is directly from a workstation. Okay, so here I saw DB2 Connect Personal Edition, and you can make a direct connection to the mainframe. I can do it from a utility perspective. So I set up a DB2 Connect server farm, and this usually resonates very well with those that surface their information on the web because they're very familiar with the concept of web farms. So in the same manner, I can create a cluster of these servers to use by multiple applications that request services from the farm, and that's where the drivers are located. And finally, if I didn't want to separate my application farm and my web server tier, I could install both DB2Connect and the application server on the same machine. So, the next page is the title page, Improving Programmer Productivity. So just skip that. And we'll really see DB2 application development, who's it for? So really three groups of application developers that we see today. One is application programmers. So this is your Java, your Microsoft.NET folks and others. The other group are application DBAs. So we see a lot of these folks lately, and we provide tooling to help these folks. So we provide something called the Developer Workbench, which allows DBAs that aren't programming experts to drag and drop and build business logic like SQL PL stored procedures, to build tables, to build SQL statements. And so depending on who you are is where you're going to fit in this list. And finally, we have data architects. And I don't know how many people expected to jump on this presentation and hear all about application developers, but it's one of the biggest benefits that DB2Connect provides to differentiate itself from just a bag of drivers. We're talking real programmer productivity here. So if you go to the next slide, when we talk about programmer productivity, what is it that the programmers want from a DB2Connect solution? So they say, okay, I'll leave the data on the mainframe, but I'm a .NET programmer, I'm a Java programmer, this is what I want. First, I want to be able to write SQL. Okay. So we provide tools in DB2Connect that fit into your integrated development environment to help you write SQL. And if you don't have your own integrated development environment, that's fine. We'll give you one. Okay? It's called the Developer Workbench. But now I have a way to write my SQL. And another key thing is that the SQL in the DB2 family, so from the iSeries, the zSeries, and Linux, Unix, and Windows, across all the places where DB2 runs, is about 98% compatible. So there's a book you can get called the Complete Reference Guide, Cross-Family Reference Guide, and if you write to the SQL in that book, you've written a 100% portable application, and that's a beautiful thing, right? That means I can take my skilled resources on my mainframe, or I can take resources from the Linux, Unix, and Windows world, and those developers can instantly write applications that run on the mainframe using DB2Connect. And they can write business logic, and they can write all those kinds of things. The next thing you need are APIs. I need the APIs to take the SQL and give it to the database. So that's usually what we call the bag of drivers, right? It's what a lot of people out there sell. It's part of DB2Connect, but it's such a small part. The third piece is the application development tools and utilities. So I'm going to show you that, but that's where we talked about integrating to their environment. And another key thing is information. Our developers want to be able to get information. And developers, they live and breathe in their integrated development environment. So, and I bring up a lot of .NET examples because we have a lot of those customers building applications in .NET that run on the mainframe. Progressive Insurance is a huge customer doing that. So they want access to information. So developers, what they do, their day, they get up, they get into the office at around 10:30, right, have their case of Diet Cokes there. They start working, they're hard workers. They open up this thing called their integrated development environment, so visualstudio.net, and that's where they live their whole lives, right? And they leave that interface to maybe do a same-time message, to go on the web, to do a Google search, and maybe to play a little Minesweeper. So that's kind of it, right? I can tell you this because I was a developer in the lab. So aside from the Minesweeper bit, when I jump out of there and I go into a Google search, that's exactly what they want for information. I want to be able to Google information. So we have hooked up to Google Search the DB2 library set for the zSeries and distributed platforms and the iSeries. And what that means is you can go and type DB2 create table in the Google search, and you will get back, the very first hit will be a DB2 create table statement, and you can go and look at that. So access to information was very important for these developers. That doesn't necessarily come with DB2 Connect. It's free. It's Google, right? But we do have toolbars that you can download and put into your own web browser that will directly hit our information. And finally, application deployment. It's great that I've built this application. I built it very quickly. How do I deploy it? Is it a client install? Is it over the web, heavy footprint, light footprint, et cetera? So you go to the next slide, SQL-based DB2 API. So again, this is getting a little redundant, I guess, but here are a bunch of APIs that we provide. Okay. So go to the next slide, non-SQL-based DB2 API. This is a little more interesting, right? Because in today's world of kind of loosely coupled transactions, service-oriented architecture, there's really two ways in which I can create loosely coupled applications. One is through web services, okay? And the other is, if you're a Java person, web services or Java Beans, right? They're both meant to encapsulate business logic. And with a click of a button, I can go into any of these environments. I can be in Visual Studio. I can select a stored procedure. I can right-click on it, and boom, create a web service. And that particular stored procedure that's just wrapped by the web service can run on either Microsoft IIS application server or the built-in application server that's in DB2, which is actually WebSphere, or any application server that's Java-oriented. We actually give Microsoft developers the opportunity to build web services and deploy them on the Microsoft stack or on a more open source stack. And this is very key, folks, because, you know, web services at the top is so not about technology. When I give a, you know, service-oriented architecture 101 course, I don't even talk about technology until I'm halfway through. Web services is about taking a business process and breaking it down into smaller, repeatable tasks. Where DB2 Connect fits in is the ability to take that logical breakdown of your business, map it to the underlying stored procedures with metadata, and instantly create those as reusable objects with the click of a button, aka a web service. So there's pretty much three key audiences when we talk about application developers, as I talked before. This slide, I guess, could say the open source as well. But we have the application DBA, the Java programmer, and the Microsoft programmer. So for Java, plugins to Rational Application Developer. For Microsoft, plugins into VisualStudio.net. And the application DBA is this development center. It's now called the Developer Workbench in DB2.9. And this is, again, as I mentioned, an integrated development environment for non-programmers. Okay, so that's where your DBAs can go and start to build this logic. And depending the tool you use is depending, A, what you do and how you deploy. So if I'm a .NET developer, I use Visual Studio. If I'm a Java, I use Rational. If I'm a DBA, I use Development Center. Why do we give DBAs the ability to build this logic? Because I don't know your environment. So in the Java world, right, when we abstract the business process, we look at things in Java Beans. And quite frankly, Java programmers hate SQL, okay, and they don't want to know about your stored procedures. So in many shops I work with, it's actually up to the DBA to write the stored procedure, and the Java programmer assembles them in his application. And the way that he or she wants to assemble that is maybe using EJBs. And so the application DBA can take one of our tools and do to connect, right-click on a stored procedure, and instead of making it a web service, they'll just make it a Java bean. And then the Java programmer understands that when I do a customer credit check, I'm going to grab this bean, and I'll call these methods on it. In other environments, maybe the Java or the Microsoft program, they actually write the stored procedure in the database. And so we give you the flexibility with our tool set to evolve to whatever situation you want. In the mainframe world, I have to be honest, a lot of mainframe DBAs, maybe with good reason, don't actually love their developers to get on their systems and do whatever they want. So the DBAs kind of formulate the business logic, they test it, implement the SQL in a stored procedure, and then they expose it to the developers. In smaller shops, you know, it's perfectly acceptable for my Microsoft developer to go on to my production database and execute a script that creates the stored procedure and creates a table as well. So if you go to the next slide, integration into VisualStudio.net, that's VisualStudio.net. That's connecting to DB2. You can see all the nice little integration points there. The key things here are in the middle. You'll see the word IntelliSense. This is a great, great feature. And, in fact, you can't even get it when you're developing the SQL Server in .NET unless you actually go and buy a third-party product. And we hook our IntelliSense up to the underlying database schema. So now a developer They're working on an SAP implementation on ZOS, which is, what, some 30,000 tables, right? Maybe I don't know all the tables or what schema they're in. If I'm writing a SQL statement, okay, I write select star from Paul Z dot, and Paul Z is my schema, it automatically enumerates all of the tables underneath. That's an incredible application development, a rapid application development tool. You can see that this SQL editor that you're looking at in the middle is colorized. There's a squiggly line at the top for errors. If you look at the bottom, there's another unique thing to DB2 Connect and .NET, and that is the IBM output message pane. So I interviewed literally hundreds of .NET developers when I drove the features into this product here. And overwhelmingly, they would say, you know, I get this error, and I have to go through pages and pages of a build tree to figure out that there's something wrong with the database. I didn't correctly select the right table. Well, that's why we put that IntelliSense in there. So when you write an SQL statement, it's almost impossible to not write to select the right table or to specify an incorrect table name. But if you did have a database error, I could go directly to DB2 output message pane, and it doesn't matter if I was going to Linux, Unix, Windows, AS400, i5OS, ZOS, et cetera, I could actually instantly find the database error. So those are just two of about 15 very, very unique things for .NET programmers that they get when they go to DB2 that they can't even get when they go to SQL Server. And how did we come up with that? Well, we worked with them. At the bottom, you can see we're a VisualStudio.net premium support partner, and we have the Optimize for Visuals.net logo. The next slide is integration into Eclipse. This is actually Rational Application Developer. It looks very similar to the developer workbench. So the bottom line is we provide plugins for Eclipse-enabled development environments. So if you don't know what Eclipse is the kind of open source answer to what you just saw on the previous page, because they actually look the same, right? They both have an explorer, they both have a palette where you work from. So Eclipse was invented from IBM. It was donated to the open source community, and essentially it's a productivity workbench. And then companies can build for-fee or free plugins. And these plugins allow you to perform tasks. And it was really designed to bring in the fact that maybe I'm running a Java application, maybe I'm doing some database stuff, maybe I'm doing some graphics stuff. If I was doing all three of those, I had to open up three different tools. And so DB2 Connect, the point is here, provides plugins into the open source Eclipse, and they're free. So the next slide is just another integration point, Zen Studio for PHP. Okay, so you can go to the next slide after that. Called DB2 Connect version 9 simplified application deployment. So now that we've developed the application very quickly, I need to put it into the hands of my users. And so we wanted to make that as simple as possible. And so what we offer today is a type 4 driver. Okay, so this is just a small 2-meg file. Just dump it right into your application. It's the exact same driver that's run on the ZOS, and it has a royalty-free distribution license. So once again, you can give that to family members for Christmas as well. It can also be used to connect to Apache Derby, which is an open-source database, a part of the Apache Server Foundation framework. And the SQL for Apache Derby is 100% compliant with DB2. We have a very simplified runtime client in version 9. It's about 12 megs. In DB2 Connect version 8, it was probably about 60. So we did that because we wanted to give deployment opportunity such that if I was going to connect with all of these different types of interfaces, not just, for example, Java and JDBC, then I would have a minimal footprint. So 12 megs can be easily embedded in an application process, and that's what that's for. That runtime client also ships as an MSI merge module. So if I'm building a Windows application, and when I build that with Install Shield, I simply go and add the DB2 Connect or the DB2 Connect client installation to my application by simply checking a little checkbox. That simple. The next slide is still simplified application deployment. In version 9, we introduced a ODBC driver. So in the same manner that I provide you a JDBC driver, which handles SQL J connections too, but that's only for Java. If you're just doing ODBC or CLI, then I can just give you an ODBC driver. In the future, I kind of can't hold this, you can't hold me to this even though this is being recorded, but you're probably going to see all of our interfaces come by themselves like this, right? So if I was doing .NET, today I have to install the client. Maybe I'll have my own .NET driver in the future. So we're working on that today. And so if you're just going to support one application, use this driver. And if you're going to support multiple applications, then you install a client. So let's look at this next slide called three tiers of a DB2 Connect solution. Okay? So in here, you can see we have a runtime client, the DB2 Connect server, and the DB2 ZOS. You can see that you have different types of applications on the far left. They are writing to the different interfaces, and it gets converted to DRDA and flows across TCP/IP to the DB2 Connect server in the next tier, right, which then flows to the DB2 ZOS. Okay, it's DRDA in and DRDA out. The next slide, continuous application availability. Here, as I mentioned before, the DB2 ZOS is considered to be the gold standard of availability. Our biggest competitors, they want to be like the mainframe. And there are specific hardware engineering pieces to SystemZ that allow you to provide that. For example, the Sysplex, data sharing, the coupling facility, because it's a shared disk, and so on and so forth. So for applications that are going to run off the mainframe, right, then the front end of those applications become the weak link. If I'm in a model view controller-like environment, if I move my graphical tier and my logic tier off of the mainframe, well, then I'm not going to have the mainframe levels of availability, am I? And to the end user, they don't care where the error is. If an application is down, it's down. And so what you should be looking for in a connectivity solution is something that's going to provide mainframe-like availability throughout the entire solution. And that will allow you to take advantage of economies of scale when you say, I want to put my web serving tier on a Linux platform, but I want to keep the data tier on the database platform. So quite frankly, when you run applications off the mainframe, the rest of the infrastructure can be the weak link. If you don't exploit data sharing, if you can't reroute network failures, if you lack a resilient infrastructure, then you're not going to get the same value propositions that you gave to your customers. So you have kind of two-tier. This example here is a continuous application on a two-tier. If you look at the user interface in BizLogic, right, at the top left, there's a lady there working away. She's a point of failure, right? If that place fails, then as far as she's concerned, DB2 on the mainframe failed, right, because her application isn't responding. In the middle, you have DB2 Connect server. That could fail. You have the network link to the ZOS. That could fail or have issues. And then you have the ZOS box or the IF5OS box, and that could fail. I got 4 points of failure here. The fact that DB2 ZOS won't fail in most cases doesn't insulate entirely my application. So how do you deal with two-tier distributed application failures? It's the next slide. Well, a failure at the database level will make DB2 unavailable for all applications. How do I deal with that? I introduce redundancy. And that redundancy is data sharing. Okay. Now, you want the data sharing to be transparent to the rest of the connectivity process, right? Or else they're going to take an outage or they're going to see a communications error. At DB2 Connect, how do I make DB2 Connect available if it becomes unavailable? Well, I have to introduce redundancy, right? Same kind of thing. And that redundancy has to be transparent to the application. So the fact that DB2 might fail on the back end had better not cause a trip on the middle tier where DB2 Connect is. And if DB2 Connect fails, it had better not cause a middle tier on the application. And, of course, when applications fail on the end user, we call that pretty much the three-finger salute. The Control-Alt-Delete is how people usually deal with that. Okay, so go to the next slide. Continuous application availability, dealing with DB2 outages. You can see here on the far left, I've created a cluster, right? A data sharing group or a Sysplex on the far right. And that is going to alleviate the problem of the problem with DB2 fails. So I've got that isolated, okay? I can get the user interface back by providing the redundancy in DB2 Connect. So DB2 Connect has this thing called automatic client reroute. So if I was connecting to a DB2 Connect server, right, and that DB2 Connect server went down, I could automatically reroute the client to another DB2 Connect server. And there's many ways to do that, and we'll talk about that in a couple slides. We go to the next slide, data sharing plus DB2 Connect connection concentrator. This is probably one of the greatest pieces of technology that's in DB2 Connect that's extremely unique and is massive reduction in mainframe resources. So you have the DB2 data sharing. That's your cluster for high availability. So you can see at the top I have DB2 and a bunch of threads. Okay? Connection Concentrator can reroute transactions around failed members. So if it's an in-flight transaction, obviously I get a rollback. I get SQL code and I re-execute it. And if it's a new transaction, it automatically gets rerouted to surviving members. So you can see at the bottom here I have my application agent, and they connect to a logical agent, and they grab a coordinator agent. Now that coordinator agent, there's a number of them that sits in a pool, so you can see that on the right. And those agents, the logical agent can grab a coordinator agent and connect to the thread. Now through Workload Manager, right, we're looking at what's going on the Sysplex. Is something going down? Maybe Workload Manager hasn't picked up that one of the data sharing groups is down, but we figured it out because we had a rollback on one of the threads that connected to it. So even before WLM tells us there's an outage, we can figure that out sometimes. And, of course, we work with WLM to load balance. Because availability isn't just about something being down. It's about something running within the service level agreement. So automatically, DB2 Connect will reallocate threads of work around failed members and balance across the members for optimal performance. Now, I talked about Connection Concentrator from a performance perspective. From an availability perspective, this thing is great for performance. Why? Traditionally, people use what they call connection pooling, because creating a database connection is the most expensive operation possible. So I create this connection pool, and now whenever an application wants to connect to the database, it grabs it from the pool. Great. When does it take down that connection? When does that connection get returned to the pool? On application disconnect. And when you think about your typical web application, I go on to Amazon.com, I type in the last name of an author, and boom, I get a book back. Then I read it. And I probably don't click a button again for another 20 seconds. And then I do something else. And then I click five times, and then I don't click for a minute because I'm looking at stuff. This is all one application running. And that's the problem with connection pooling. What Concentrator does is allows applications on a transaction boundary to share those coordinator agents. What does that mean? I go and I do, show me all those books where the author is the copyist. That's an instant transaction. I get it back. Now somebody else on the web comes up and says, show me all the books, the last name Backlars. The same coordinator agent that I use to go to the database goes over to help that application out. And when it commits, it comes back to some other application. So very, very rich performance and high availability. The next slide. DB2 Connection Concentrator for high availability. I think I covered a lot of this stuff, transparent routing around failed members. It's very fast, even if we'll figure out things have failed even before WLM tells us. And it can integrate with dynamic VIPA, but you don't require it. Okay, the next slide, you should have a magnifying glass on that one just to make sure you're in the right set. That's when you focus on minimizing DB2 Connect server. So I removed the first concerns of the tier by data sharing and showing you that DB2 Connect integrates with Workload Manager and Sysplex environment to minimize any types of outage. So now we want to look at the DB2 Connect server. So if you go to the next slide, you'll see that we created a cluster of DB2 Connect servers. Okay? So in the same manner that we cluster for availability on the mainframe, we're going to cluster the middle tier. And this is going to provide better availability. The next slide, DB2 Connect clustering using Cluster Manager software. So there's a number of ways to do this. This example here, using something like Tivoli System Automation or HACMP, right? These are just typical Veritas, typical clustering software for the distributed platforms. Okay, one fails, it will take over the other. Problems, typically it's a two-node cluster. Takeover times are typically slower, so depending on your service level agreement, this may or may not be okay. And typically one of these machines is idle. So this, you might have an active idle scenario here, right? And someone might say, I want to fully utilize all my servers. But I'm just trying to build for you what your options are, okay? Now the next slide, I can implement some smarter failover technology here. using something called High Availability Disaster Recovery and Client Reroute, which is part of DB2 Connect. Okay? And so you have the same capacity. This is a good thing. So when I said it was active idle, and if one goes down, what that means is I have full capacity in the other server. If I had an active-active cluster where they were both active and one of those servers went down, then all of its workload needs to go to the second server. And therefore, I'll be able to run at 50%, right? So this is one of the good things about this. It's very, very simple to set up. But the problem when you mix this with HADR and client reroute is it's limited in a two-node cluster. Again, one is idle, which is better for your serviceability. But it might just be sitting there idle, and that's not a good thing. It also doesn't support two-phase commit. So I've shown you two kind of simple clustering solutions here. Okay? So maybe there's a better way. And the truth is, it's not necessarily there's a better way. It depends on your environment, right? Another thing you can do is use network equipment and virtual IP. So virtually anyone, Cisco, CSS is an example, is providing you some kind of networking gear which can create virtual IP addresses. And so now I can get around the active idle bit by clustering a whole bunch of servers together. Okay? And they're all active and they're all doing work. What don't I like about that, or what are the things you got to trade off? Well, I'm going to pay more for the network gear. You're going to have reduced capacity during outages, right? If I take an outage on that, on one of those switches there, I'm going to have an issue. And there's no support for DB2 Connect in this example. So in the last two examples where, and I should have mentioned it, where it was active idle, I actually could have DB2 Connect store information in that tier. For example, if I'm taking my data from the mainframe and synchronizing it with mobile devices, DB2 Connect would actually create tables on itself to manage the subscriptions. Okay? In this particular example, you limit some of the functions to be able to do that. Okay, the next is just another example. I could use the Windows Server Network Load Balancer. So just skip by that. It's the same kind of concept. And then the next slide, I didn't want to go into too many details. I just wanted to have them complete here. But I can actually use clustering virtual iron. So, for example, iron VFE for Linux servers, right? I build this cluster of inexpensive Linux servers. I put DB2 Connect on them. I can add and remove DB2 Connect from that cluster, single system view, and it will allow you to store information down on that particular DB2 Connect server. Okay, so now you're starting to get the best of both worlds in this example. The next slide is virtual iron VFE for Linux. That just shows you an example of it there. Okay. So we should be on the slide continuous application availability, multi-tier distributed application. So here I'm actually set out another tier of logic. And we still call this three-tier, even though there looks like four that's there. But now I've separated DB2 Connect and the application server. Right? So I'm separating the user interface from the application logic, from the web serving farm, from the database in the back. And in this example, as you can see, there's actually four points of failure. So how do you deal in that environment? Well, you've got the same issues for ZOS as in you did in the two-tier. I know it's a little confusing because the two-tier looked like three tiers, but it was two tiers. So you got the same options there. Okay? With DB2 Connect, though, you've got a couple of options here, okay? I can either put DB2 Connect and the application server on the exact same machine, or I can separate them. And there's a license, or if you remember the DB2 edition or the product that you buy, there's licenses that, depending on your strategy, will minimize the cost of DB2 Connect, right, based on how you handle this. So what do I like about co-locating them? Each application has their own, each application server has their own DB2 connectivity. Okay, so if I fail one, it doesn't affect the availability of others as there's takeover resources. And I get to reuse an infrastructure that's already in place. So if I walk into a customer and they have a very large, established, rich web server application farm, then typically I might say, well, let's put DB2 Connect on each of those because it fits your deployment model. Okay. So the next slide, co-locating DB2 Connect and the application server. Here's an example, right? Each application server has DB2 Connect. It makes no difference to your costs, right? There's two additions here where I don't care how many of these things you have, it doesn't matter what how many of these you want. You want to add in 50 more to your server cluster because you're getting lots of web traffic over Christmas time? Go ahead. It won't cost you a cent. And then take them out afterwards if you want. Okay? DB2 Connect, basically, you don't have to worry about this because the resources are very marginal. It doesn't use a lot of resource. And there's a setting there. I shouldn't have put that in. But there's a setting there that you typically do in this environment. So next slide, a look at how to deploy DB2 Connect to minimize use of mainframe CPU and other resources. So I've kind of shown you what are the great application development pieces, okay? And then I've shown you what are the rapid application development pieces, what are the deployment of that application, how do I keep that application available, and now how does the application run so efficiently, and how the heck can you consume so little resources on the mainframe, which is a big differentiator with our competitors. And some of our competitors, and I realize this isn't a competitive talk, will come in and do some proof of concepts with a very small workload, and it won't look like there's a lot of mainframe usage. But you always should test with your production type loads. Anyways, DB2 is very unique in that we use a distributed data facility with DRDA, which is the preferred method of going into the database on the ZOS. Most other folks use a different layer. And DDF, it's important, any connectivity solution, it's very important because DDF is built on Enclave SRB architecture, and which is a heck of a lot more scalable than TCB-based approaches. So if you're looking at other connectivity solutions, you should really check into to what's the architecture they use. So an example, DDF avoids checking the SQL DA data types after prepare. That's about 20 instructions a column. That address space uses key 7 for move instructions instead of key 8, right? Cost is going to depend on the amount of bytes that I got to move around, but key 7 is about one-tenth the cost of key 8. Everything's DRDA into the DBM1 address space, so there's no switching from DDF to DBM1 on each fetch. It's about 3K of instructions a fetch. Now, I don't really know who exactly is out there and if this is too low details or not. The point here is that the infrastructure, now that we've got this quickly built application that got quickly deployed that's very available, right? That application very efficiently uses your mainframe. So, the next slide, basic architecture overview. Here's how DB2 Connect works if you don't do anything. Okay, you just start it up. Every application gets a connection agent and it goes to a thread. One-to-one-to-one relationship. This is that issue that I talked about if I didn't when I was on the web, only I didn't have connection pooling. The most expensive operation is to build the line from the coordinator agent to the thread in DB2. Right? So for that reason, if you go to the next slide, connection pooling overview, people do connection pooling. So now you can see there's a pool on the right. Okay? At the start, that would just nothing would be connected to the database, and you'd probably in the pool. You wouldn't see any CAs outside of that box. You would see 4 CA blocks in the pool doing nothing. An application connects. It takes a CA from the pool. It does its work. Another application takes another one. Another one takes another one. When it's finished, it brings it back to the pool. Okay, and that was the exact web example I gave. What's the problem there? Typically, today's web-based transactions do all kinds of work at different stages. So go to the next slide, DB2 Connect Server Connection Concentrator. That is the solution, right? I talked about how this works already. And on the right is how it gets enabled. But we can actually one-up connection pooling, which is what everybody else uses, to say that let's move the resources on transaction boundaries. So now you have this very efficient, non-consuming, non-resource consumption architecture that is going to minimize the amount of connections it has to do. So, how does that end up on your system? The next slide, reduce ZOS resource usage. This thing will reduce the number of DB2 threads, quite simply. I won't have to create all these extra threads on the mainframe. And when you look at that, you're probably saving about 250K memory on an active thread. Any inactive threads are about 7K. And, of course, you can decide how many threads to keep around, how many to pool. But if I had to create needlessly hundreds of thousands of threads, you can see the extra resource consumption on the mainframe that you'd be driving. Well, DB2 Connect Connection Concentrator takes that away. It optimizes it. So every time I drive a MIP, it's for good reason. Okay, so now I think I've shown you this architecture that's optimized to quickly build an application, deploy it, be available, and optimize and minimize the use of resources on the mainframe. Great. I have a wonderful application that I don't think anyone else can touch. How can I make it even more wonderful? How about extending the reach of your data? So that's the next slide. It's the title slide. If you flip that and go into types of data you can combine with your DB2 for ZOS data, using DB2 Connect, I can get to data from other DB2 ZOS subsystems. So I can take applications or data from two subsystems in a single SQL statement. I can mix data across the entire DB2 family. It's not shown here, but that includes Informix. So I could actually select my customers from the transaction list in the ZOS and merge that with overdue accounts that's held in Informix and merge that with something that's held in DB2 or directly query it with data that's held there for an analytical application. So we call that federation. So DB2 Connect comes with read-write federation to the entire DB2 family, including Informix. What's more is I can take non-relational data items, Kix, IMS, vSAM, MQ, and access those components using SQL, even though they're not relational databases. Why? Because we give you stored procedures that wrap around the services in there, and they always maintain their RSS transactional integrity. And finally, using an add-on product called WebSphere Information Server or WebSphere Federation Server, I can extend the reach even further to any data source I have, be it Sybase, SQL Server, Oracle. Now I can mix whatever I want. And the beauty here is it's the same SQL API. The fact that DB2 has a decimal data type for money and SQL Server has something called money and Oracle has something called number, the developers don't have to know this stuff. You just say decimal. And when DB2 goes and gets the data from SQL Server or Oracle, it will say, this money data type is this decimal, and let's put this together. If a function doesn't exist somewhere, it'll function compensate for it. That's incredible savings, and Harley-Davidson is a company that's well-known, or one of our reference customers for that, because they just write to a single API, and it totally makes application development across heterogeneous sources extremely simple. Okay, the next slide. How do I get to that data? There's three ways. Federation, which I just described. I can build stored procedures. So in DB2, I can actually build stored procedures in pretty much any 3GL language. And that allows me to leverage frameworks from the operating system. So that's really neat. And I can use SQL functions. So that developer workbench I talked about, the integration of .NET and RAD, I can click, point and click my way and build an OLADB function. So the next slide, DB2 Connect Federation, that just shows an example of federation, right? The application sees a single database image. This is what DB2 Connect is providing you. That single image, and it looks like there's a spelling error there, but that single image is really a representative, in this case, of 5 different databases, or 4 databases, one's data sharing. But they all look like one to the application, and they're all programmed as one. If you go to the next slide, DB2 Connect Value of Federation. It's exactly what I say. The programmer works in a single database, is unaware of the physical location of the database. I can join data from multiple locations, and the data architect has complete freedom of data change without impacting the application. So I don't have to go back to the development team because I've replatformed this data over here. And this is an enormous benefit. I don't have to go and extract, transform, load, or copy data from the AS400 down to a distributed tier solely because my application is written in .NET. This all goes away, or because I'm using Excel. The next slide shows just how broad that can be when you use something like WebSphere Federation Server. And by the way, this could be almost anything you can think of, XML, MQ Series, it can be database, you name it. Okay, so now I can have this broad reach, but when I start to talk about broad reach of data, I get into the service-oriented architecture, which is what the next title slide is. So jump to the next page. What I can do is expose IBM data service objects as services rather than data. Okay? So So you can see here I have a bunch of SQL functions, and the WS stands for a web service, and it's wrapping the SQL. So how is that going to work for you? Well, let me give you an example. Here I have a SQL-based application. This is the next slide exposing IBM Data Services, Data Server Objects as web services. And below it are those APIs that we talked about. And, of course, the APIs, I select data. You can see the bottom two arrows are actually calling a stored procedure. And I select, and this is your typical application. Okay? Now, in the slide, you can see that I put WS around each of those. With a click of a button, and typically when I present this, this builds and it wraps the the web service around it. Click of a button, these instantly become web services. And that changes the way my application is built. Because what I have is a web application that instead just calls a SOAP or XML, as you can see in the bottom, and it says get query on hand. I don't call stored procedure quantity on hand, right? I don't have to select from this table. I call a business object in my service-oriented architecture stream, which is that web service. So go to the next slide. It kind of tells you what DB2Connect does, right? It provides the infrastructure for SOAP and XML messaging, and a host wrappers for the DB2 objects are provided. And that allows you to wrap the SQL, the stored procedure quantity on hand, on the right side as a web service, and that's what allows your web application to call it. So the next slide is enable mainframe for non-DB2 data. Okay? So here I have my MQ series, my kicks, my vSAM. You can see here are the names of some stored procedures which have guaranteed RRS transactional control. So you're fully integrity here. And at the bottom, you can see the little PDA there is actually calling in to a server up to DB2Connect and is making a call to an MQ series transaction or to vSAM or to kick through the DSN AKIX stored procedure. Okay. So the next slide, consuming web service to get real-time data. I'm going to show you an example of what I have customers do. So you skip that into consuming data from web services. You should see a little application on the left in tan, and then there's a SOAP and XML call in red. Okay, so how does this work? Well, I've got this application, right? And at the bottom is my logic, right? Let me go and select this data. So that's all written in your typical selects. That's where the JDBC is underneath the application. To the right of the application is a SOAP XML call. This is how I build an application today without DB2Connect, right? So I make this web service call to get the temperature, and I'm going to mix it with the data from the database. Guess who's handling all this? The application. Guess what has to change if you want to change any of this? The application has to majorly change. The better way, which is the name of the title on the next slide, is to simply make the same SQL call. But in that SQL call, do you see where under the select it says get temp and bold? It's calling the web service. And indeed, you can see that I get the employee table, and within DB2, I get the get temp function, which goes out and gets the temperature from a web service provider. So I'm building my logic into the logic tier, which is DB2Connect, removing it from the application per se. Okay, it just calls a function in a select statement, very simple. And that allows me to change my application with very little cost and put the logic into DB2Connect. Here's a great example. We ran a .NET demo or beta a year and a half ago, and you should have seen the profanity in some of the addresses I was getting when I got the report. Well, when do you think I got that? 3 weeks after the beta? And if I was in a data warehouse, when would I have got that? Maybe a day after if I had an active data warehouse and it was cleansed in real time, I'd have to go through that. Well, what we learned from that experience was we should have done this. Taken the application, okay, and do the insert of the customer, values, customer address, data, and every time I insert a customer, if you see on the bottom, that fires a trigger for new customer, which fires a stored procedure, which goes out to a web service to cleanse the data. And in this example, I used a WebSphere data stage or quality stage web service. That could have been any web service. I could have done a credit check with that. The point is, real time into my transactional, because the logic was built into DB2 Connect, I could have done this as opposed to found out late. So the next example develop a new sales channel with DB2 Connect. Here's a great example. Application, I insert into Overstock. The Overstock fires a business logic trigger. That trigger invokes a stored procedure that goes to eBay or Amazon.com and posts something that I'm selling. Right? All this logic is contained for you in DB2 Connect, and it's orchestrated there as well. Okay, for some reason, the same slide got in here twice, if you go to the next slide, so just skip that. And as we go to kind of round out this application, you should be on Web Services Summary. Those are really benefits of Web Services. I'll let you read through those later. We provide that with point and click, and that's the point. Okay. So we kind of head into the last 5-10 minutes of this presentation, then we'll open it up for some query. Kind of got a cheeky slide that says, making dinosaurs play with cool gadgets. So people said the dinosaurs, mainframes are the way of the dinosaurs, and I love throwing that in people's faces because the mainframe is as alive as ever. In fact, we're having significant growth on the mainframe in the DB2 business, which you can count on us continuing to invest in technology like DB2 Connect. And Gartner did a study, I should have put it in here, but they did a study at the start of the year which went out and said, where do you plan to spend your money? And DB2 was the biggest hit on that database. It outdid Oracle expenditures, outdid SQL Server expenditures, and the ZOS was a huge part of that. So there are a lot of customers that Gartner noted and surprisingly found that are replatforming to the ZOS because they understand, especially when coupled with the new Zip and Zap engines, that there are a lot of cost efficiencies up on that mainframe, and availability is everything. So go to types of mobile applications. Kind of have two types, right? Occasionally connected, always connected. Occasionally connected might be me on my BlackBerry, right? I'm writing a little email. I send it. I retrieve stuff down. Then I disconnect because I get on a plane and I fly away. Then I connect again. And, of course, you can imagine what an always connected application is. If you walk into Home Depot and you go to the bare paint stand and you use the little computer, that's actually DB2 Every Place, which is running there, which is exactly what I'm talking about right here. That's this piece that's also part of DB2 Connect. Okay, so next time you decorate your room with bare paints, it'll be DB2 Every Place, which is also known as Mobility on Demand. So DB2 Connect also provides you, beyond all the stuff I've talked about, is a mobile infrastructure for your data. Comes with a very small relational database. It's 200K, fully SQL 9299 compliant. You can deploy this thing on almost any mobile device you want, unlike some other vendors. It's, you know, Windows Mobile, PC. I can do it on embedded Linux, Symbian, Neutrino, Java, etc. It also comes at the bottom, you can see, with this thing called the synchronization server. And this thing will synchronize the data from these mobile devices through DB2 Connect, where the synchronization server resides, the back-end databases like the mainframe, but also, for free, SQL Server, Oracle, any JDBC-enabled database. So go to the next slide. Those are all the platforms it runs on. Okay? So now DB2 Connect provides me an environment where I can take my data and manage synchronization services like conflict detection and resolution, security controls, and move this data and synchronize the data to any of those devices. Go to the next slide, DB2 Mobility on Demand and .NET. And I put this slide in here because now you can see that now I can build my .NET on my mobile application or on my big application, and I can get all the data. The big thing here is what DB2 Connect provides you is a unified set of drivers for your entire architecture. I don't have to take a driver from the iSeries and a driver from DB2 Connect, and a driver from Mirant, and go and use this driver to get to this source. I use one driver, and that one driver can get you to, as you saw, Kix, IMS, Oracle, SQL Server. So I unify the drivers, which means you unify deployment, which saves you a lot of cost. So we'll round this out with key considerations when going to large-scale production. So I'm not sure how many people on this call are folks that do the implementation, but the last 6 minutes or so is going to be for you. First, you need to decide, am I going to run a Windows, Linux, or Z Linux? And how am I going to distribute the application that enables these drivers? So DB2 Connect servers run on Windows, they run on AIX, HP, Sun. They run in 32-bit and 64-bit mode on Windows as well. They run on Linux and Intel, and it runs on Linux vSeries. The questions I get is Unix better than Windows for DB2 Connect? Is 64-bit good? Is Linux on the vSeries a good idea? How much memory should I have? And what should we spend money on? And what's not worth it? And that's how I'm going to finish out this presentation with a couple of Paul Z best practices. Okay. So, go to the next slide. And, you know, I can't be held accountable for this. This is just my impression. So I disclaim any type of IBM from any type of comments I'm making. You got Unix and you got Windows. Unix, I don't necessarily feel that the operating system is faster. What you will find is that the processing architectures are enormously faster. So, for example, a System P server, a P-series server, probably could replace one of those processors, could replace 3.5 of an Intel AMD processor. That's what we've seen. Okay? So they're going to offer you a better balanced system, Unix typically better balanced, amazing scalability in a big SMP. As you grow from a 4-way to an 8-way to a 16-way, this thing is virtually linear scalability. It doesn't, when you double the processors, you'll double the workload for a database, for sure. It's got a really good, solid TCP/IP stack. The hardware isn't always cheap. Now, I really want you to pay attention to that for a moment because it's only part of the solution cost, right? You have to look at the overall solution cost. Because indeed, when I hear Larry Ellison talk about Oracle Rack and how they want to take data off the mainframe, they say, look how expensive the mainframe is. But what they never bother to tell you is how much the software is. And what you ultimately find is it's a heck of a lot more expensive. So make sure you look at the whole solution. I'm just saying that the hardware acquisition of a Unix box is typically more than Windows. Windows will give you good CPU performance. The scalability is getting better, but not as good. And it doesn't really have as much of the horizontal scaling. But it does run on commodity hardware. But the TCP/IP, not so great. Now compare that to Linux. Linux, same commodity hardware as Windows. Significantly lower OS costs than Windows. I would update this. This says not great vertical scalability. I should have updated that. Anyone who's at the 2.4 kernel, you've got, you know, up to 16-way scalability. But the scalability you'll be looking for DB2 Connect, you're not going to put this thing on a 32-way box. It's got good TCP/IP. And my only question to you for Linux will be, what's your comfort level with Linux? If you're comfortable with it, in my opinion, this is a great choice for DB2 Connect. Of course, on the Windows side, commodity hardware, same thing. The OSs are expensive when compared to Linux. You probably, because they're expensive, you want to share more applications on that box. Again, the TCPI isn't that good. You've got a cost of care and feeding. You really maintain this thing a lot. Okay? So those are the options. The good news is that DB2 Connect runs on all of them. So I'm not here to sell you to one platform or the other. I'll take you through what I think are some benefits. Before I do that, I just want you to go to the next slide, which should say 32-bit versus 64-bit. In my opinion, I have not observed significant performance for 64-bit. So, if you have some older machines that are 32-bit and you're buying the new dual or quad cores in your environment and going 64-bit, you have a great opportunity to replatform to the DB2 Connect tier that hardware and try to drive some more cost allocation out of that thing as you capital cost depreciate it. The only thing I will tell you is don't run 32-bit on Itanium 2 hardware because it is a dog. It uses the Windows over Windows emulation. Absolutely slow, slow, slow. So if you're the richest person in the world, go buy 64-bit everywhere. If you have to make tough decisions, I don't think that 64-bit on the DB2 Connect tier is the right decision off the bat if you're just doing connectivity. If you are doing some of the federation stuff and the mobility on demand stuff I showed you, then maybe you'll consider that. Okay, next slide, Z-Linux. From the slides I showed you, it seemed to me that Linux had the least amount of trade-offs to it. Okay? And then you got the option for Linux that runs in an IFL, an integrated facility for Linux, which has its own engines that are priced the same way commodity processors are priced. This is a really nice option, folks. Runs on the same hardware as DB2 itself. It's very flexible. I can allocate unused capacity to DB2 Connect. In fact, this was the first on-demand before IBM ever called it that. IFL hardware is significantly cheaper than ZOS CPUs. I can use hypersockets, which is less than 1 millisecond latency for very high throughput. And it's a great choice for server consolidation. So if you're looking to get rid of maybe a whole tier that was built on a bunch of aging 32-bit Linux boxes, then you may want to consider Z-Linux. The next slide just kind of shows you some benefits of hypersockets. It's in-memory TCP IP, right? Low latency, high throughput, reduces locking contention. Good performance, especially for latency-sensitive workloads. Latency-sensitive workloads, that is the web, okay? Okay, I think I wanted to open it up a little for questions. I had two slides. The next slide is criteria for choosing hardware. Here, when you choose a CPU, the only thing I want to tell you is look at the specint numbers. Don't look at processor speeds. Go to specint, and you can see the rating on specint for the integer math. That is what matters for Connect, okay, is specint integer math. Make sure you have enough memory. You can see the memory that we allocate in Unix versus Windows. It's a lot more in Unix. In the future, this is moving to a threaded model, which is what the Windows is. So you'll see a memory reduction there as well. Always look at your network connectivity, okay? You want to be gigabit Ethernet, as far as I'm concerned, right? If you want to do encryption stuff, think about encrypting that to the hardware, like IPsec network cards. Because when you encrypt, and DB2 Connect can do encrypt the flows, you have to connect through software, and that's going to be encrypt through software, and that's going to be very slow. The next slide, just one more to go here. Use the tools on this page to figure out that, indeed, you're not having any network issues. Because if you're the DB2 Connect administrator, I will tell you right now, if something goes wrong, everybody's going to blame you. Because you're this black box in between, and everyone wants to pick on you. And when you do your topology diagrams and you see a network cloud, it's not a cloud. Go and see what's underneath that. If I'm routing to five different network routers before I hit the Connect server, I'm going to have a performance issue. And finally, you have to make sure that the DDF has the right priority. So the last slide there, getting more value. I've talked for about an hour and 20 minutes on this subject, so I'm going to open up to questions, and you can read through that. And I thanks for your attention.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Do you hear me?
Yep.
Anola, are you there? Can you go ahead and opening it up to questions from the audience?
Yes, thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, make sure your mute function is turned off to allow the signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 at this time to ask a question, and we'll pause just for a moment to assemble our roster. We'll take our first question from Robert Moore.
Yeah, hi, Paul. Thanks for the presentation. I had a question. Are there any tools when we get a big network going on, we can have many copies of DB2 Connect that are out there that you may have to do maintenance on. Are there any tools to help you identify the various copies of DB2 Connect?
Yeah, thanks, Robert. That's a good question. So there's two things you can do. One is when you're looking for kind of that kind of enterprise-wide actualization of the stuff or reporting, the Tivoli brand in DB2 has that kind of management stuff. But we have a couple of stored procedures as well that are built into DB2 and DB2 Connect that allow you to go and figure out the operating system and the patch level, the release level of a DB2 software on a system. So if you wanted to do the roll-your-own approach, very simple to create a looped stored procedure that goes through and gives it passes it a list of IP addresses or host names, and it will go and bring back to you the information. And then you can go what you need to do from there. Or you can use kind of a prepackaged mass deployment and maintenance solution.
All right, we'll take our next question from Dale Holtgren with IBM.
Hi, it's Dale Holtgren. In the situation where we have Java Type 4 drivers and then we also have the DB2 Connect gateways, when do you recommend using the Java Type 4 drivers because they would be going around the gateway, and when do you recommend using the gateway?
Bill, great question. Probably makes you say, wow, if there's one thing I missed in this presentation, that was it. So there's a number of things there. One thing you can do is you can actually, so what do you want to type for? Someone wants to type for because they don't want to put the client down, right? That's pretty much the only reason, okay? When you go with a type 4 connection, you do lose some problems, right? Or you do lose some advantages of DB2 Connect, right? I lose the workload management balancing. I lose the ability to get connection concentrator. So all those nice things that provided some transparency, that's why we look to build those off DB2 Connect. However, again, some folks want the light client footprint. You can take a type 4 driver and connect to the DB2 Connect server and then make that connection. So that would allow you to get those advantages and get the advantages of a client deployment. The only other time when I think, you know, and it's up to individual applications, that I would want a type 4 direct connection without a Connect server, because again, in the scenario I just gave you, then your only argument could be, I don't want a Connect server. Well, if you don't want a Connect server, then you're giving up some of these situations, advantages. Why don't you want a Connect server? Typically, I'll probably hear, we have application developers, and they don't need these things. They just want to get up there and work. What they can do is make that direct connection, and if they want, they can actually get the connection information from a Connect server that's used in production, but make the connection locally. So there's a lot of options. It depends. Typically, I would like to see the decision to make a direct connection or to make a connection through DB2 Connect be based on the application's needs and the resource. So it's hard to tell you which one to use when, but it's important to know this is what I'm giving up, and does my application service level agreement allow me to give this up? If it does, great. If it doesn't, not, you know, then you can't. But the bottom line is, if you're choosing Type 4 because of the deployment, you can still get that and still go through DB2 Connect.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Diane Reeser.
Hi. Thank you. My question is, are there any tools or anything like a monitor for DB2 Connect so we can troubleshoot to see where our problem is?
Another very good question, Diane. there's some stuff that's built into DB2 Connect. Do I think it's the absolute greatest in the world? No. And there's a tool called Performance Expert, which can help. It has some DB2 Connect monitoring pieces. I know they were updating some stuff, so maybe you could send me an email.
Okay.
My email's at the top of the presentation.
Okay.
And I will get exactly what they've got under there. So natively, it's rudimentary monitoring, and then there's some other things that can help. But you probably want to see how much time did it spend here and what was the time in the network and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good question.
We'll take our next question from Judy Ruby Brown.
Yes, this is Judy Ruby Brown. I do DB2 on ZOS. And the universal JDBC driver does have SysPlex awareness and connection concentration in the driver levels that came out at least a year ago. So there is that capability for handling WLM and all that.
Oh, well, thanks, Judy, for bringing that up. I that's odd. I haven't seen that, but I'll take a peek at it.
Sure. That was all. That was the only comment I was going to make. But thank you very much for this good presentation.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay, we'll take our next question from Zichiong Yu. Caller, your line is open. All right, moving on, we'll take our next question from Earl Dugan.
Yes, very good presentation today. I have a question. We face this a lot of times when we're going to later fix packs on DB2 Connect, and what happens is, let's say we put up fix pack 12 or 14, and somebody comes in from a lower, let's say fix pack 8 or something, and we're forced to go back and rebind those packages from the prior ones. How come when they release the different fix packs, they don't include what's necessary for the below fix packs? You don't have to bind each level?
Well, the one thing we've moved to in 9.5, which isn't out yet, is the auto bind of that stuff.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that will completely solve that issue, because I'm not sure what exactly you're binding underneath. If it's just the standard stuff, it shouldn't be an issue. But if you want to send me that in a note, well, I'll resolve that for you and let you know exactly how that will solve.
I had one other quick question. When you're for version 8, we're on FixPack 12 of the DB2 Connect server. Should the clients be at least at FixPack 10 or higher as well, or any?
You know, I mean, if someone was to ask me what my recommendations were, I'd love to see them all in step. If they can't all be in step, then I definitely want to see the server updated before the clients.
Right. Okay.
But there are certain fixes in there, and depending on the application driver that you're using, you know, there could be some enhancements to something in a certain fix path.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Just to clarify on the comment from Judy Ruby, is that, yeah, I'm just grabbing it now because it kind of caught me off guard. FixPack 9 is version 8. So anything after that JCC driver in FixPack 9 is what you'll need, and you'll be able to get that SysPlex and WLM awareness. So that's going to kind of change my answer from before. I just probably grabbed this slide from an older presentation. So in that case, I mean, you do have that functionality. Now it's a deployment question. And so the deployment question becomes, okay, that direct connection, or when I go through the Connect server, what I'll have is the ability to enumerate the catalog information from there and make the connection, so I can do that. The other thing is that you have to look at the scope of what that connection concentration is going to be, right? So, like I said, it's still going to be well-suited for, I think, a single platform. If I'm having a massive amounts of connections, then are they all going to use the same driver to make those connections? So there could be some efficiencies there as well. Okay, so we'll go back to the questions.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Gary Cecil.
Hi, yes. Good presentation, Paul. My question is on in DB2 Connect, when we're running on Windows and we're running through a bat file, we have to supply a password when we do the connection.
Yeah.
And my question is there a way to eliminate that hard-coded password that is in that bat file?
Well, I mean, you could change to use, like, a client authentication, right? And then I wouldn't have to free-flow the password. See, the problem is you're using a bat file, right?
Yes.
Just your regular old text file. If I was building an application, right, and obfuscate that password out, so I couldn't break that down. If you're just using a text file or you have a bunch of scripts to do stuff, I can either, I don't know if you're connecting all the time with the same user ID, you can make sure that user ID is maybe connected, also defined on the server, right? So then it will work on there. Or I got to move to a client authentication. Problem with client authentication is you have access to the client, then I have access to free flow throw. So there's some trade-offs there, right? I mean, that's what I have on my laptop, right? I have a bunch of bat files, and, yeah, they include my password and username, but that's because you're an administrator, right?
Well, we use an ID that has a never-ending password. Now, the other thing is that on replication, when they run the apply process,
yep.
That's running through that same interface, but they have a way of hiding the passwords. They have an encoded password that's passed through, and I was just curious if that can be implemented as well as part of that solution.
So, I mean, that's all programmatic in the application, right, where this is kind of just a script file on yours. But if you send me an email, I'll pull aside my security guy, and maybe we can talk about that. I mean, and
yeah,
maybe the option is to encrypt the bat file on disk, right?
Yes, I guess that's another option, but then it becomes impossible to go look at it and do stuff with it.
Right, so then I mean, another option might be to evolve the bat file so maybe it sets up some parameters and you pass it the user ID and password yourself. I mean, it's always trade-offs, right?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, if they're doing it through the ASN apply, I can't understand why they can't do it with the bat files. In other words, connect with a some type of encoded password.
Yeah, it's just how do you? I guess the question is, it's a bat text file. I gotta somehow pass that password to it. So I have to make a call to something. Like ASN Apply is doing something under the covers, clearly, right? But
yeah,
this isn't really that programmatic. It's just a bunch of commands running in a bat file. But if you send me something, maybe we can come up with something, right?
Okay, yeah. I've had this request in for like 2 years, so I'll send you a copy of it.
Okay, well, I'll get you an answer. Like, what's just jumping in my head right now is maybe even doing some kind of LDAP authentication, which is supported in DB2 Connect 9 through our open plugin. And so now I could maintain that list somewhere else.
Okay.
So that would be one of them. But we'll talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just even more comment on that bit about the connection concentrator, because I feel bad about that, is, real time. This is on demand at its finest. But they're recommending DB28 Fixed Pack 11 as being the best part or the best fixed pack and on for that type of functionality.
Moving on, we'll take our next question from Stuart Moore.
Hello. It was really a question to do with mainframe accounting for the amount of CPU used on the host for a DB2 Connect client. If you have a three-tier architecture where DB2 Connect is installed on a mid-tier and you just have DB2 client on a particular machine, is there a way of setting that accounting string on the client? I know you can do it on the DB2 Connect server, but it would be really handy to be able to set it on the client without doing it programmatically.
Yeah, there is a client-side connection string. I don't think I've ever set it up to go to the mainframe to see what happens there. But I definitely set that accounting string with distributed connections. So pipe me an email. I'll run a test. But I think that's how I'd handle that.
Okay, great.
And,
thank you.
Yeah. By the way, into the last question on that bat file, the other thing that popped into my head was, in DB2 Connect version 9, we introduced a concept of something called a trusted context. So I'll get that caller some features there. That might be able to help you out as well, because it may not have to take the actual connection from that bat file. I could trust a context into something else and see if that works.
We'll take our next question from Manas Dasgupta.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the presentation. My question is about the new ODBC driver that you mentioned that comes with version 9.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be like a JDBC, like the Type 4 driver in JDBC.
Yeah.
Does it have DRDA built-in, or does it need to go via a gateway?
So everything is in DB2 as of version 8 is DRDA. So we used to, on the distributed side, the communication fabric or infrastructure was DB2 RA.
Okay.
And then you would use DB2 Connect to connect DB2 RA flows to DRDA application requester flows.
Okay.
But in version 8, we went to this thing called the common client, and from then on, everything dumps to DRDA. And if you look at the top of that presentation, somewhere in there, there's a slide where I actually showed you the three-tier architecture, and you'll see at the bottom, it's all DRDA at the bottom.
Okay.
In fact, it's slide number 21.
Okay, so does this new driver need a gateway to go through the mainframe, or does it have that?
It doesn't, but you need a license. So the same with the Type 4, and that's actually a question. You can go a direct connectivity. I said that the driver was the exact same on the mainframe as it was on distributed. However, you still need a DB2 Connect license. So we put a, like in the Java Type 4 driver, there's a license jar file, and if you don't have that jar file, then it won't make the connection. It will fail a DCS connection. So technically, yes, from a licensing perspective, you need to make sure you have the license file, and that comes from the DB2 Connect product.
Right, and is that true for the ODBC driver as well?
That's true for the ODBC driver as well. It will block it.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Judy Chalko.
Hi, this is Judy. I know this isn't really a network call, but I just had a question if you could point me in the right direction. We were told that the most recent connectivity guide was the fifth edition. It's called SAP on DB2 for OS390 and ZOS, and that's back from 2003. Is there any kind of link that kind of verifies that? It just seems like an old connectivity guide for what's going on today, network-wise.
Well, Judy, it's not a network call, but no, I'm just kidding. Send me an email. Send me an email. I'll find someone who knows that. We have a pretty close relationship, obviously, with SAP, so... I'll find something if something's more recent for you.
Okay, that's a deal. Thanks.
Okay.
And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to the speakers for closing remarks.
Paul, any closing remarks?
I just want to say thanks for your attention. Those are great questions, and I'll actually probably evolve the presentation with them, and hope you guys got a chance to learn that DB2 Connect is a heck of a lot more than just connectivity.
Great. Paul, thank you very much, and audience, thank you for attending today's call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude today's conference. We do appreciate your participation.